Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Allianz conference call on the financial results for the third quarter 2015. For your information, this conference is being recorded. At this time, I'd like to turn the conference over to your host today, Mr. Oliver Schmidt, Head of Investor Relations. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Good afternoon from my side as well, and welcome to our conference call about the results of the third quarter 2015. There's nothing specific to be added from my side today, so without further ado, I hand directly over to Dieter.
Yeah, thank you very much, Oliver, and good afternoon to everybody on the call. Let me just dive directly into the presentation. When I start with the business highlights, we are continue to focus on new product developments in retail property, in the life and health space, also mainly retail, and then in asset management, and I think in all categories we are seeing very good progress, which is then also visible into our profit margin and new business development in the segments. I will come to this later. In the investment space, we had a successful a quarter with some three really headline-making large investments in Germany, UK, but also in Ireland, helping to diversify our investment portfolio. So now let's start with the numbers. So page 5 on the group overall results, 2.5 billion operating profit might have seen by some of you as a small disappointment. Actually, the underlying operational results are unchanged on a high quality level and also very good, but financial markets had some particular volatility in Q3, so FX results, volatility in equity markets also influenced the P&C and life and health segment results. So that created some negatives, and I will explore on the details of this when I come to the specific segments. Total revenues down, mainly coming from the life segment, because P&C and also asset management is in revenues up in the third quarter, and the reduction in life and health is very welcome by us, because it is an evidence of our change in strategy that we are clearly reducing the volume in traditional single premium business and replacing it with new products, but so far at a lower volume, and new business value and new business margin, when we come to this page, is clearly demonstrating that the strategy is working. Net income is more down than the operating profit. Added to the reduction, operating profit is a higher tax rate and some more impairments also coming from Q3 number, financial market movements, that explains the difference. But already to be mentioned it here, I come back to this also at the end of the presentation, we stick to our operating outlook for 2015. We are well prepared for a very good year end as predicted. Now the capital page. Shareholders' equity actually slightly up. In total, unrealized gains did not move a lot. We had offsetting effects between European government bonds and corporate bonds. So one has widening spreads, the other had reduction in spreads and also base interest rates. And in the equity markets, actually, the unrealized gains stayed pretty stable. The stocks which were impacted by the market actually did directly go through the 20% hurdle, and we have impaired them in the quarter. That should not surprise you. That is quite a lot of stocks in the energy and commodity sector, which mainly created the immediate impairments. So, Solvency II capitalization at 200, and we are now really converging to the number and IMAP approval I would expect in the next couple of weeks. The 12 percentage points down is split into three categories. Number one is market movements. These are just 5 points, and if you want to test it against our published stress numbers from last quarter, use 20 base points on the interest rates and 7 percentage points on stock market movement, and that gives you both sensitivities combined 5 points movement. The next 5 point is coming from adjusting to EIOPA rule on how to calculate U.S. equivalents, and we moved from the 100% CAL to 150% CAL, and that is the recommended formula by EIOPA. And the last 2 percentage points are final adjustments coming from the German regulator on our IMAP, mainly affecting our German solvency ratio, and then the 2 percentage points is the effect on a group level. And then there were some smaller changes coming from the IMAP approval process, which are adding up to zero because there are pluses and minuses. So overall, a very comfortable level, ready for the final go on Solvency II, and still the same dividend level as promised last year being accrued. Now moving to the P&C numbers. Internal growth, nominal 2.4%. If you correct for acquisitions and FX, only 0.6%. That is actually, we still have pretty good growth in our core markets. However, in Germany, same strategy as we do in life, we reduce traditional products with guarantees, and please be reminded that we have a fairly large book in Germany in retail accident business, which is a savings product with guarantee, which is sold as a single premium product, and therefore the same strategy as in life is being applied here. When I ignore this product line and I go to what you would all perceive as real P&C business, Germany has actually a growth rate above 3%, it's or even close to 4% in the quarter. The other reductions are coming from Brazil, further cleaning up of the portfolio, but I would say aggravated by the macro picture in Brazil, which clearly darkens. Then the runoff of our Russian retail. We are now with our Russian retail business year-to-date 95% down compared to the year before, and then Fireman's Fund is also continue to reduce volume. So that are the negatives in the overall growth. And then we are very more careful in the writing in our global line business, credit insurance, as well as the large corporate business and specialty business. So the growth is really coming more from the retail and mid-corp businesses. I would really positively highlight our Allianz Worldwide Partners, that is the global health and assistance business, as well as Australia and Spain, who has a real run in its business development, because you will see that I highlight Spain also on the following pages further. So moving to the results in P&C. Combined ratio at the first glance, pretty flat with a 94.1, so a tick up in total, but underlying some moving figures. So first of all, last year was free of CAT events. This year we have 120 base points. Last year we had a runoff result of 2.6, where we had a big negative coming from Fireman's Fund, about 1.8 percentage points. This year we don't have a negative from Fireman's Fund, so the reserve, the positive runoff across the segment is roughly the same, the 4.4%. Expense ratio, a tick up. There is a one-off effect as we have reallocated in our assistance business some numbers between loss ratio, so service provided versus expense ratio. That is neutral for both numbers, but it is a shift between the two lines. And then we see also a further mix change with a trend to higher commission and acquisition costs. So therefore, the expense ratio is up. The underlying loss ratio is suffering a little bit from large losses, more, but not significant. I think that is some 40, 50 base points. And then we see also clearly a deterioration of the numbers coming from Argentina. And we have booked in Argentina actually additional 50 million split between prior year and current year. That is a catch-up on the deterioration of the inflation rate in Brazil. And we have to turn this business. This might be, that is in Argentina, easier than in Brazil. We are already on a track to increase at the moment our prices by 2.5 to 5% per month, because Argentina Motor runs on 30-day policies and not 6 or 12 months policies. So the operating profit in P&C is down compared to last year by 70 million, and it is all coming from the investment result, underwriting a very small reduction, that is the slight uptick in the combined ratio. And I come to the investment result in a moment. Let's look first at the operating profit development country by country and combined ratio. When you look at the individual combined ratios, I think the strong combined ratio is really supported by a broad basis of successful large entities. There are our three continental European home and core markets, Germany, Italy, and France. There is AGCS, which continues to have a very good result. The 98.6, which you find here on the page, you have to split into the old AGCS business and then the Fireman's Fund commercial business edition. AGCS standalone is below 91, and Fireman's Fund is 117, so still above 100. We have actually in this quarter still booked some cleaning up. We have not increased reserves, but we have cleaned up some other commitments from pool participations, receivables, or other smaller balance sheet item. And then we had a final settlement with the disposal of the business with ACE. So all in all, that cost us about 45 million in operating profits for the quarter. So that was a smaller cleanup. The Latin American number, the big negative, is coming from Argentina, as I explained already, and Brazil is also still negative as the environment really delays, I would say, the recovery quite some time. The other numbers are still all very strong, and again, I would point out to Spain, which is not only growing, but with an 85 combined ratio, also doing a great job on creating margin. The other businesses are pretty much in the area what you would have expected. Where I should add here that we see in Germany, France, and also Belgium, actually quite some smaller weather-related claim events in the third quarter, nothing which is being called a cat, something which is just costing some money. And when, for example, in Germany, our normal quarterly budget would have been 6.3% for weather, and we consumed 6.7%. So that is, and for France, the difference is bigger, and also Belgium has some effects of this that affected this part of the continent. If we move to the investment numbers of P&C, so page 15, the running yield income is pretty stable. So all decline in yield has been compensated by higher asset volume, and we run pretty flat on investment income. However, foreign currency investments held in the hard currency balance sheets created some 70 million loss in the quarter because foreign currency goes through trading directly with the change of the currency, and that is all of the reduction in our P&C number here. When I just mention FX in the total group balance sheet, the FX trading result of the quarter was on a gross basis 600 million euro loss. In P&C, it is the share goes straight for the shareholder. In life, it's of course depending on what balance sheet it is split with the policyholder. So that is the volatility of Q3. In October, actually a third, so around 200 million of the 600 returned to the positive. So even if we don't know what will it be on December 31st, that is at least a good start into the year-end quarter. And with the other information, I think on reinvestment rate, duration, there is nothing to talk about. In particular, it's all business as usual. Let's move to the life business. Yes, 10% reduction in volume, a lot of single premium reduction. Actually, when we would use what we are not doing, but maybe here for comparison with our peers, the APE terminology, our APE is actually 9% up in new business year over year because we are writing a bigger share in recurrent premium, and single premium is down. We are in recurrent premium slightly up. That is the first visible change in the mix. And when we then go to the different markets, you can see in detail that the traditional business, so with the traditional guarantees in Italy, in France, and in Germany, is down. And we have replaced it with unit-linked business, or in Germany with the products with the new lean guarantee type, which is consuming less capital. And we will actually on our Capital Markets Day explore this section much more to show you also the effects on capital consumption and what does it mean long term. The only volume number where you could say, well, that is not great, is actually the new business volume in the US, which is currency adjusted 30% down. So our market share in fixed index annuity moved from 30 percentage points we had last year to 20 in 2015. 20 is still at the upper end of our long-term market share in the fixed index annuity space, and we have probably a bit underestimated how fast the competition will copy our Budbee product. And not only copying it, actually putting it with more aggressive terms into the market. Therefore, the new business value we have generated out of the business this quarter is really very good. And I come to the new business value in a moment. Let me first spend a minute on the operating profit development. You see an increase in the investment margin that is sometimes a bit difficult to understand effects that we have in the policyholder-shareholder split in Germany to do the catch-up for the whole 9 months, depending on how the realized gains and losses and the overall investment income develops for the full 9 months. And the low participation for the shareholder in Q1 is now turning into a higher participation in Q3. And overall, we are still on track for the full year result. I think the German results are much easier to understand when we have the 12 months together, because that is then the legally binding allocation of the profits to shareholder and policyholder. So therefore, during the year, it is always a bit of a volatile proxy for really targeting the policyholder credits. That drove the investment margin here in numbers up. However, we have two big individual negatives in this P&L for the quarter. There is on one hand another write-down of Korea of 148 million. This time it is the old life products with traditional guarantees above 6% is the guarantee levels of this block. And in the last quarter we had an old block of health business, which also has high guarantees, which was being evaluated and being written down. For the next quarter, as we have now covered both blocks of business which could create trouble, we are not seeing any further write-downs. Actually, last year we had this life block write-down in Q4, and now it is in Q3, so it is a bit also advancing when you want to compare it to 2014, what we had a quarter later last year. So the other negative one-off in the overall numbers is actually out of the dynamic hedging process of our old VA business. We had a 100 million euro base risk negative. The base risk in the old VA block is very simple, coming from the fact that customers' money is in actively managed equity funds, and the hedging goes to index funds. And when an active managed equity fund moves differently than the index, you create a base risk, and that base risk was actually very benign in the last 2 years, in most quarters slightly positive. This quarter it created a 100 million hit, which is buried here in this operating profit development. So now coming to the new business margin, we put the new business margin in the heading, because 3.0% is the second best new business margin the group ever reported. Only before the financial crisis there was one or two quarters with a better number, so 3.0 is a tremendous success in this environment, and it is a tremendous success for our business mix change strategy. So how do I get from the last quarter's maybe disappointing number to this quarter's 3% number? First of all, we are using for the evaluation of the new business margin always the interest rate curve at the beginning of the quarter. So we talk here, the Q2 was evaluated at April 1, and when you would evaluate the second quarter at July 1 interest rates, then we would have seen 2.6% new business margin at last quarter. So here you have 3.0, so it is 40 base points to mix change, and we are expecting that we in the next years continue our trend to move the new business mix. Also, I told you already some time ago that we are adjusting in the U.S. The fee schedules and the expense charges to price for a higher new business margin. That is now becoming visible in the Q3 numbers with a 3.8 percentage point new business margin. And again, Spain has not only a very good growth in new business, but also with 4.8 a great average interest rate, and is producing a nice new business value. If we have a look at the overall investment margin, the investment margin overall is 22 base points. Our midpoint new business margin is 17 base points a quarter. That is our expected value for each quarter. So therefore, 22 is at the upper end. So from a structural point of view, the investment portfolio and the numbers are very strong, but you can also see that the net harvesting number was negative. These are the equity impairments and the FX losses, but mainly coming from Germany, compensated by the policyholders. Therefore, you see in the mechanics an offsetting effect under the profit sharing, and the net margin for the shareholder is pretty stable. That does not mean that the policyholder are not getting anything in Germany. Actually, for the whole 9 months, the profit sharing percentage for the policyholder is slightly higher than the year before. And duration, we are managing to a fairly high level, so we are continue to run our duration gap below half a year, which is, I think, a good and stable evidence of our risk policy. Now coming to the assets under management, I believe that this is the second positive story I can talk about today. PIMCO's outflows, 16 billion euros, that is certainly substantially less than the previous quarter, so we are very well on track in the reduction of the outflows, and that is further evidenced by the October numbers. In October, we have for both asset managers achieved positive net inflows. So PIMCO has in October, since April 2013, the first positive inflow month. And Allianz Global Investors had in October another good month. Here the quarter number for Allianz Global Investors is 1.3 billion. Now the last four quarters, I think they created some 18 billion of net inflows. The assets under management were affected by markets. Equity markets down, and also corporate bond market with the credit spread widening down, so 2.8% market value loss. Also, this is looking completely different in October, so therefore we had certainly for asset management a very good start into the last quarter of the year, and we are looking forward then to the year-end results. The revenue development for asset management, I'm now on 27, is 1.1% up. Clear, the underlying fees and commissions are 11% down on currency adjusted. That is still driven by the outflows we have experienced over the last four quarters, obviously. The plus is coming from the performance fees and which we first booked in September, and I told you in the beginning of the year that you will see in the PIMCO operating profit a back-end loaded development where we are expecting in the last month of the year, starting in September, a series of one-off performance fees where we have booked the first number here in September, as just being mentioned. This The revenue margin are pretty flat in development. Actually, PIMCO with 39.7 in 15, and this margin excludes obviously the performance fees. We are a tick up against second quarter and a further tick up against the first quarter. So all a very stable development. In Allianz Global Investors, there is some more complex stories because we included and changed beginning of the year some advisory mandates, which we included in our assets under management calculation. That is the main driver for the shift of the fee margin. When I do it on a like-for-like basis, the margin development is very unexciting, flat. So now, what does this mean for the operating profits of the asset management space? Clearly, when you start with last year's third quarter, the volume effects are what they are. The performance fee is the positive impact, and then we also have made in a like-on-like basis improvements in our cost-income ratios. When I start with Allianz Global Investors, here showing a 74.5, but we have booked in the third quarter 34 million restructuring charge to really improve the cost income ratio in the upcoming years more, and that is the first half of the restructuring charge. We will probably see in 2016 more of it. When I take out the restructuring charge, AGI was already at 68.5 cost-income ratio, which is, since we started the setup in the current form, the best cost-income ratio so far, and clearly below the 70%. PIMCO, including performance fees, below the 60% level, but let's do a fair comparison to the second quarter and ignore the performance fees for a moment, then we can actually see a 2 percentage point improvement against the second quarter, so no additional one-off burdens, but also improvement in the underlying expenses, in particular back office administration, also out of the offshore outsourced services. So overall, the 600 million euro operating profit for the asset management business looks not only very good, I think with the underlying explanation makes really hope and appetite for the future in asset management. Corporate segments, pretty uneventful, flat. Nothing really specially to report on it. And then I would go to the last page of my presentation, the translation from operating profit to net income. Clearly, additional write-downs driven by Q3 markets. That was 100 million more than last year. And when we ignore the slightly complex tax treatment last year, where we had did win with our life business a big court case for old tax claims. When we leave this aside, our tax rate worsened by 6 percentage points compared to last year. We had last year some tax-free realized gains. This year we have more tax-free realized losses, and also we have actually a planned restructuring in Italy where we are merging and collapsing some subholding structures, which cost us some money. Therefore, the tax rate in Q3 is higher than what we would like to see as the long-run version. And now I'm coming to the summary. 9 months, revenues still up, clearly the life volumes trending down, but I think to the benefit of shareholder and also policyholder, because they are now getting the better products with the lower guarantees and higher returns. Operating profit flat against last year, so therefore a very promising starting point for the last quarter of the year, where we have to expect, at least from the things we can control, less one-offs. When the financial market goes yo-yo around Christmas, that I cannot influence. And shareholders' net income is 4% up with compared to last year, with the positive outlook for the year-end operating profit, so that number should be then also relative to last year improve further. And we are in a very strong capital position and balance sheet position at the 200 Solvency II ratio, and we are seeing the IMAP approval shortly happening, and we are well prepared for it. And with this one, I would stop here and look forward to your questions.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question at this time, please press the star or asterisk key followed by the digit 1 on your telephone. Please ensure that the mute function on your phone line is switched off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. If you find that your question has already been answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing star 2. Again, please press star 1 to ask a question. We will now take our first question from Brooke Hannaf from Citigroup. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi there. Thank you very much. Firstly, I've got two questions really, but firstly on life, in terms of your outlook for earnings growth, because there are two contradictory things going on here. So firstly, obviously your new business sales are down a lot, but new business margins are new business profit is kind of flat. But on the other hand, the IRR has gone through the roof, it's really strong, and your payback period has, on that business seems to have fallen to 4 years based on your current assumptions. So what I wanted to ask is, are we kind of going into a new paradigm of, halting growth for the sake of, Solvency II and low interest rates and margin management, or do you actually think if you add these two things together, your earnings, reported earnings can actually grow? So that's a long question, sorry, but question one. And the second question, in LATAM, you talk about the sort of delay in the turnaround progress. This feels a bit like Russia, obviously for different reasons, different drivers. So, is this not high on the agenda for exiting? Thanks.
Okay, so thank you very much. I think the better IRR is coming very much because the products are consuming less risk capital, and that is clearly a driver and improvement for it. So for the customer, the products are actually more attractive, but also for the shareholder. I think we have adjusted really very well this year to the Solvency II world a big time. You could argue that we maybe started later than some others, but I think we are now running a more complex strategy, not only to moving to unit-linked and risk products. Our strategy is unit-linked risk products, yes, but a big focus on the capital-light or capital-efficient products. So these are the alternative guarantee concepts which we are running now everywhere, whether it is the fixed index annuity in the U.S., then copies of these products in the German markets, plus some new and innovative developments for the German market specifically, and that allows us actually to show the bigger IRR, that these products need to be training with all the sales forces and also with independent financial brokers, that therefore the volume is going down when you say, I don't want to give you the traditional product. I would say that is a transition phase. I don't think it has anything to do with the product. That is now acceptance and training. And when more, actually in continental Europe, it would be good for us when more market participants would copy our product strategy, because then it is becoming much easier, the market standard, and then we can, I think with the size of our organization and the advantages we have in having dealt with this product earlier, I think also grow our market shares further. LATAM, I would not compare it with Russia at all. Russia was a structural problem of the market, which disadvantaged foreign players against local players. I cannot say the same in Brazil. I think in Brazil is an open market, and everybody who is doing the right thing can be successful. And we are still believing that we can do the right thing, but the economic outlook in the country has changed quite a bit, and therefore the transition, in particular in corporate health, but also in motor retail, is a bit harder. Customers are really very keen to get the best price offer, and the negotiations are tougher when an economy is not doing well. And that is the main reason for the Brazilian delay, but we stick to our plans. So a long-winded answer, sorry.
Sorry for the long questions as well, but just quickly, so are we within sight of profitability within a year, 2 years?
I think it takes a year longer than we have hoped, but I think we are turning, and still for me Brazil, but also now Argentina is clearly important upside potential for next year.
Okay, thank you very much.
We will now take our next question from Michael Huttner from JP Morgan. Please go ahead, your line is open.
Fantastic. I'm going to lobby for your employees, so it's not a real question, but I was just a bit surprised that you're cutting costs at AGI when they're doing so well, and I just wondered why that is. It's a bit of a lobbying question, I apologize for that. And then, as a completely off-the-wall question, and I misunderstand these things, since you're writing new business in life, you know, capital light, and you're stopping the capital intensive, presumably the life embedded value account is throwing up, is releasing lots of free surplus. What are you doing with that money? Thank you.
Yeah, so AGI, the cutting cost exercises are mainly on back office and administrative functions. We are actually globalizing functions. We could have globalized already some time ago. Take the finance function and other back office function. So it will not stop the great distribution and product development as well as product successes. So we do it really in a very measured basis to the benefit of both sides. The new business in life, yes, that is the long-term idea, that the new business mix is creating a higher solvency ratio for each of the balance sheet. That will be one of the levers we are using to improve the IFRS ROE of all our life OEs. And exactly on this point, we will explore further on the Capital Market Day on November 24th.
Brilliant. Thank you. That was very quick. Thank you very much.
But well spotted.
Sorry, no, thank you.
We will now take our next question from John Hocking from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Oh, hi. Afternoon. I've got three questions, please. Firstly, on capital, given these are sort of nine-month numbers and you've included a couple of IMAP adjustments, are these basically your Solvency II numbers, obviously without the formal approval? That's the first question. Second question, on the performance fees, can you comment on a little bit how much you're through that performance fees? And I was expecting more of this to come through in 4Q and 3Q, so I wonder how much we've got left for 4Q. If you could give some guidance, please. And then just finally, just to follow up on the life product changes, I can obviously say this is good news for ROE. I just wonder whether you need to do more in terms of expense management at some point on the back book, given that I guess you're not replacing the normal profit you would be generating on traditional products with these new style guaranteed life products. Thank you.
The performance fees, certainly there is substantially more to come. But I would not guide to a specific figure because the booking and accounting of this performance fees is spread over September till January, potentially February. So how much will exactly hit 3 months? I think that is too difficult for me to estimate it precisely, and you would only shoot me afterwards when I'm giving the wrong number, and I want a peaceful Christmas this year. So on life, well, in number of policies we are not reducing, so therefore the admin task as such will stay the same. The new products are not less complicated, so that is not a natural source of savings. And actually, when you want to improve the IFRS result and the ROE, the risk management actions, what you can take, are bigger drivers than admin costs. Before you see the impact of admin costs in a life ROE for our continental European businesses, I think you have to send every second employee home that you see something, and that I wouldn't see possible to run the business like this. So therefore, it is a driver, but in magnitude, pretty small.
Okay, thank you.
The solvency too. Yeah, that is my understanding of the final approach to the approved number.
Okay, fantastic, thank you.
If there is any last minute thing coming from the regulator, I'm not assuming it, but that is still the caveat I have officially to make.
We will now take our next question from Nick Holmes from Soy General. Please go ahead, your line is open.
Oh, hi there, thank you very much. A couple of questions. The first is actually again on Solvency II. Dieter, I just wondered how you justify the 150% CAL coverage when, as you know, peers are on 250 and 300%. And then different subject, just wanted to look at Italy, and the combined ratio is exceptionally good, and just wondered if you could explain a bit more how sustainable you think that is. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Well, I think the justification is pretty simple on the U.S. equivalent. That is the official rule communicated by EIOPA, and the German people are always very simple. They just follow rules. And but also for the CAL, it is a more complex concept, because depending on your business mix in the U.S., 100% CAL is translated in European language quite different depending on what business you are writing. And when you look at our net asset value levels in our U.S. life business, which are substantially higher also when you divide it, for example, by the asset of the balance sheet, you see that our capitalization in our U.S. subsidiary is substantially higher than some of the peers you have mentioned. And that is probably another explanation why 150% is sometimes a better number and a bigger number than 250.
Dieter, that's very interesting. Can I just follow up on that? I mean, do you think other regulators who are requiring 250 and 300 are interpreting EIOPA's 150 guidance in the same light that you describe, i.e. they are looking at the quality of the CAL ratio?
I think there is clearly among the European regulators an understanding that regulation for VA in the U.S. has not moved a lot since the financial crisis. And the European regulators clearly are watching this development. And that is always, when you have any discussion on the international capital standard between U.S. and Europe, that is the main discussion point. And therefore, the CAL is, I would say, is VA adjusted in its interpretation by the European regulators. All have developed a good understanding of this, and the regulators in Europe are smarter than many people believe you.
But just one final question. I mean, is that interpretation entirely judgmental, or is there any additional guidance that EIOPA is giving over how to measure the relative risks of a VA book and stuff like that? Or is it entirely up to the judgment of the Dutch regulator and the French and the British?
I think the latter you said is true.
Okay.
I'm not aware. No. Maybe they have an internal discussion about this and discussed it in the EIOPA board meeting together, but I'm not participating in this one, so then you have to ask the regulator on this one.
That's very useful. Thank you.
Yeah, and the Italian combined ratio, sure, it is a really good combined ratio, and we have a strong advantage over the market since many years and quarters. So the distance to the market has not moved a lot. And we should also we included the Unipol business in this, and still the combined ratio stayed at a very excellent level. And I would expect that we still see pressure from the motor business, but we have, for example, when I compare it with a year ago, we have a 10 percentage point improvement in our commercial business. And so to reduce Italy to motor only is maybe not fair to our Italian colleagues. Plus, what I mentioned on the first page, our retail non-motor product, which we are selling now with a large number of pieces, is also contributing to a stable, good combined ratio, and that effect we are managing. And I would see, yes, clearly pressure for motor in the next years, but also positive in the other categories. So overall, still a very strong outlook for our Italian business.
And just as a very quick follow-up, what percentage is motor of earnings, would you say?
You mean in Italy?
In Italy.
Around 60% premium or?
60% premium,
maybe
right.
A bit more, because yep. We have also the yep. big direct business included in this year.
I
have to look it up. I don't know it by heart.
Okay. Thank you very much indeed.
We will now take our next question from Andy Broadfield from Barclays. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Oh, hi. Good afternoon. A few questions from me. So the first, just on the reserves, can you just give us a bit of a feel for where the releases are coming from, whether there's been any changes over the last few periods as to where they're arising from, or whether they're fairly broadly set? I'm also interested, you've clearly focused on the Latin American businesses, Brazil, Argentina, on the cleanup, and you have obviously dealt with Russia. How should we think about the temptation from our side is to say, well, they'll be dealt with next year, and then we can improve your numbers by that amount. But clearly, an organisation like yours has things going right and wrong all the time. Do you view these as exceptional fix-it jobs, or are they just kind of run-of-the-mill? Do you view them more as run-of-the-mill for an organisation like yours? And then just finally, on the life, just returning to the life product mix shift and the hope that or the expectation to shift the products, is it right to assume that the profits you generate on 100 euros of unit-linked product will be in absolute terms less than 100 euros of traditional products, and therefore when we think about absolute profitability of the new products, it should be lower than on the traditional products? If you can just give us a feel for that absolute level of profits generated by those a unit of premium.
Okay, so let's Let's start with the reserve releases. It is really broadly distributed to many OEs. Clearly, Italy is always part of it. Our large corporate business is always part of it. Euler is always showing a positive, a strong positive runoff, but also Spain. So actually, all the ones who show really this an excellent combined ratios always have a process of very prudent reserving and recycling then as runoff. So therefore, we show in these countries also a worse accident year loss ratio maybe than some others, but that comes then back later, and you cannot have every quarter a strong positive runoff result and then not having it at the end. Well, actually, LATAM, sure. I cannot promise to you for 100% that there will be no new LATAM next year in another place of the world. I would not see it for the moment, but you can also say I didn't see Argentina a year ago, otherwise we would have prevented it. I'm still positive that we get LATAM moving. The Fireman's Fund story, yes, the cleaning brought actually still some more items to the surface which need to be cleaned, but the progress at Fireman's Fund is very strong and the integration is really very well working. The life mix change, I'm inclined to say no to your question, because the new business margin is nothing else than the present value of the future profits, so the operating profit coming out of it, forget the taxes. It's then the question of the duration of the product over how many years it will emerge. So if 100 euro of premium has the same new business margin, then it will also generate the same operating profit. Now gets to the more advanced calculation. You have a little bit less profit emergence on unit link because you have less capital charges on it, therefore also a smaller risk margin embedded, and the risk margin also comes up as operating profit. However, the unit linked business is quite often attached to PIMCO or AGI funds, so we have also a profit emergence in our asset managers. So therefore, in total, taking everything into account, I would say it's equal, plus minus rounding.
Okay, that's really helpful. Thank you.
We will now take our next question from Vinny Malhotra from Mediobank. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Good afternoon. Thank you. Just, Peter, on this, on the solvency sensitivities, which seem to have changed reasonably significantly in 3Q, particularly on the credit spreads and also on the interest rates. One discussion I was having with the investor relations team was it's linked to the policyholder participations and indirectly linked to the level of interest rates. And that is intuitive, but is this sort of a bit worrying that suddenly we have such a big impact in the sensitivities as well? So it's sort of a moving scale for us, and the movement is quite high. And just any thoughts on that would be really appreciated. Then two more clarification questions maybe. In Korea, the understanding I have, what I had was that if interest rates worsen, it could again worsen. But you seem to suggest that the two portfolios which needed these charges are sort of fixed. Just could you confirm that, please? And lastly, last question is a very quick one as well. The PNC in Germany, the investment contract type of business. Now, we can also see a material change in the investment income line where the investment contract line shows up, part of the net harvesting, and quite a significant change from previous quarters in history. Is it a one-off-ish
effect? In which balance sheet, sorry?
In the PNC investment income line, we see there's always an investment a line for reserves and investment contracts, and that has significantly changed in this quarter. Used to be minus 100, minus 50, and now it's minus 8. And probably it's linked to this AVP change.
But
is it a sustainable? So is it a sustainable effect, or is it just this quarter and then we...
No, that is a bit also, again, the compensation for the write-downs in the portfolio. That is pretty much like the German life business, because this portfolio is actually a smaller copy of the German life book, but within a PNC company. I think it's confusing for many people what a life product has to do in a PNC balance sheet, but that is the way how it started many decades ago, and in this yield environment, the product will probably not have such a brilliant future. But it is also more driven by the financial market losses in the quarter.
So it could normalize. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, I wouldn't normalize it. So Korea write down, because this is a formulaic mechanical calculation, so therefore you can actually say with pretty high certainty today, with today's interest rate in Korea, there will be no further write down this year.
And is this a beginning of period point and or end of period point that you measure this formula in Korea?
This is a 16-quarter rolling average. So even if the number in the last quarter moves a little bit further, the 16-quarter rolling is clearly seeing. But that also tells you that it is not going away for 2016.
Fair enough.
And the solvency sensitivity, I think you spotted the right driver, that is the lower policyholder participation, but that is not driven by the market movement of 20 base points, yes, to some extent, but we had a large share of our internal model driven by the feedback from the regulator in the summer, and that has increased then finally also this volatility number, so that is also a consequence of the convergence process to the final Solvency II number.
Thank you, Rita.
So it's not that you have to now with each 20 base points that we move further up the row. That is not happening yet.
Fair enough. All right. Thank you, Rita. Thank you.
As a reminder to ask a question, please press star 1. We will now take our next question from Michael Haid from MainFirst Bank. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Thank you very much. Two questions. First, on the payout ratio. I'm a big fan of your payout ratio, 50% on stated net profit and on the dividend continuity. And to my understanding, the 50% goes for the stated net profit. What do you do in a year when, or if the net profit goes what you think is above the normal level? Do you adjust for one-offs, or is it just a stated net profit? And you try to manage down earnings in other ways. Second question, German life business. You mentioned that the first quarter and second quarter you had assumed lower policyholder participations. In the third quarter it goes up. Is it that usually in the fourth quarter we see a burden in the IFRS operating profit from German life, or should we expect no seasonal impact here?
Okay, so first of all, the payout ratio is our stated policy that 50% of the net income is paid out as dividend, and we clearly said we want to stick to this dividend policy for a number of years, and it was not meant as a one-off. And the result is what the result is, and of this it will be 50%, and I tried to guide in my speech that the 4% in net income growth we have at the moment for the 9 months, that this could further improve by year end when you also assume that the operating profit ends up higher than at year end. That was what I tried to say, but maybe I was not successful in what I'm saying. The German life policyholder participation is actually pretty stable. We had in 14 for the whole year 83.1%. At the moment, year to date, it is 82.3%. So that are small movements, and which are mainly coming also from accounting differences between local stat and IFRS, which are always influencing also this number overall. In the last quarter, there are sometimes effects in the German life operating profit coming from the true-up calculation on the DAC amortization. Depending on the year, the true-ups, I cannot tell you what would be the outcome of the true-ups this year.
Okay, thank you very much.
We will now take our next question from Frank Kopfinger from Commerzbank. Please go ahead, your line is open.
Good afternoon, everybody. I have two questions. My first question is on the 117% combined ratio at Fireman's Fund. Can you comment a little bit there on this development? Do you expect more restructuring charges there, or should we expect even a reserve strengthening going forward here? And then my second question is overall on tech and goodwill impairments. As your Munich neighbor yesterday indicated that, especially in its German primary life business, these intangibles could be at the risk triggered by the low yield environment. Do you see the same risk here, not only at your German entity or entities, but maybe broadly speaking, as we just had it with the DAC write-offs now in Korea?
Yeah, that was the question I answered before, that I do not see the Korean issue in any other balance sheet. Certainly there is a normal regular amortization of deferred acquisition costs, because in the end deferred acquisition costs should have an end to their lifetime. If the underlying policy is matured, the DAC should be gone. That is the normal process. So therefore there is an ongoing amortization of it, but this one-off triggered by loss recognition events, I think that is limited to Korea. And goodwill impairments, in particular in Germany, I wouldn't foresee, and with the strength of our balance sheets and also with the money and profit we are producing. Our German life business, to as a reminder, has a 15% ROE. When a 15% ROE couldn't support a goodwill, that would be really a really sad economic situation.
And maybe for other international entities?
We for the third quarter, we tested all our goodwills. There is nobody is in trouble. Fireman's Fund. Sorry, I almost forgot about it. I think we still have too much expenses and infrastructure on it, and we had some cleaning of the numbers so far. So the 117 is certainly not the underlying run rate of the business. we had still not a good loss ratio there, and also the expense ratio is still too high. But in the expense ratio, we moved already to 32% now in the third quarter, and the one who remembers the story from last year, that we started in the commercial business with some 40% expense ratio, I think we have done a tremendous step forward this year. The loss ratio is mainly affected also by some clean-off, so writing off on premium receivables and things like that. So it is not that we increased loss reserves in Q3, and I would also not expect loss reserve increases in Q4.
Okay, thank you.
As a reminder, to ask a question, please press star 1. We will now take our next question from Paul Diat from RBC. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, good afternoon. Couple of questions from me. Firstly, just looking at the life new business and the sort of ongoing shift away from traditional products. Clearly, you've had great success in Germany with your kind of reduced but still some element of guarantee products and the Perspectiva, etc., and the fixed income annuities in the US. I was just wondering, you know, in the likes of France and Italy, where unit link seems to be coming to the fore, is there any scope to put some of your lower guarantee products into those markets as well, or are you happy to just sort of continue down the pure unit linked route in those markets? And then the second question was just on PIMCO and the cost income ratio, which is obviously showing signs of improvement. I seem to remember that during the issues that PIMCO has been having, you've been kind of increasing the level of marketing spend, etc. Now that PIMCO seems to be turning a corner, kind of further down the line, should we expect the expenses to start reducing again? Just a view on that would be good. Thanks.
Thank you for the question, Paul. I think in France and Italy, France is now running in its new business mix in the retail space at 50% unit linked, 50% still the traditional. We are certainly thinking of whether we, in the next years, what we call a hybrid product, so fixed index annuity style, could be helpful. In Italy, we are now, I think, closer to 80% unit linked, but also there, the fixed index annuity product is in the design phase, how we find a version which really is suited to the Italian market. We believe from the U.S. experience, and in particular with Italian expense structure, which should really create a very good product, and we will certainly see how fast we can bring it to the market. PIMCO is already showing this quarter 2 percentage point improvement in the cost income ratio, and that is certainly not coming from a recovery of the revenue line. So the 2 percentage point is really a reduction of the one-off expenses, but also a reduction of the expenses related to the volume. I think all in all, we could probably see that in the back office processes, about 40% of the costs are variable. We still have the increased marketing costs and some other one-offs, and the retention packages as a one-off still in the numbers. So going forward, we were already, I think, optimistic in summer about PIMCO's development, but our optimism is growing with the development at PIMCO.
Excellent, thank you.
We will now take our next question from William Elderkin from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead, your line is open.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. Three questions. Just back on the dividend, I just want to check if I've understood the policy correctly. In a scenario where your capital is absolutely fine, but net income, for whatever reason, is down a bit year on year, would the sort of ambition to keep the dividend flat win, or would you be sort of allow the payout ratio to rise above 50% if need be, or is the 50% a fixed number if you want? Secondly, just on the very strong Italian combined ratio, I'm just interested, how much of that combined ratio, if you like, is coming from the core Allianz business, and how much being impacted by the portfolio transfer from Unipol? And finally, do you have any sort of exposure to the liability risks faced by certain German car makers?
Okay, so that's an interesting new question. Yes, I did not mention the second rule of our dividend policy because I thought when I mentioned it, you would all conclude on the phone that I am predicting a falling net income. So therefore, I stayed away from this. But you are right, in case the net income would be a bit smaller than the year before, we stick to the previous year dividend, which translates then into a payout ratio above 50%. That is the stated dividend policy, but I thought that could be misinterpreted when I use it. In the Italian combined ratio included are for the Unipol business, let's say roughly 200 million in the quarter at a combined ratio of, let's say, 94. That was what you wanted to know. And then certainly we have a share of the DNO programs of most German car makers. The limit we have for our share on each policy is clearly defined. It will not create a big number when any European or U.S. corporate would come with a claim under the DNO program, and that is, I think, well maintained. Well, I think our risk management in the large corporate business, you can also see how we actually handle the Tianjin harbor claim. Our predicted loss on this is some 60 million euro, and actually we took very much the learnings on storage claims from the Bangkok flood event 3 years ago, where we had this surprise concentration from many European and international corporates, and we are now really much more careful on storage concentration and don't want always to be hit by unknown clash, and that is part of our overall risk strategies.
Very clear, thank you.
As a reminder to ask a question, please press star 1. We will now take our next question from Andrew Ritchie. Please go ahead, your line is open.
Oh, hi there. Two very quick questions. Dieter, you mentioned that PIMCO had positive net flows in October. Can you give us any more detail across which strategies? I'm assuming you're still seeing outflows in the traditional book, so this is presumably in the income fund, or is it broadly spread? Just any more color as to the nature of the flows you're seeing. I think the original expectation was you hoped PIMCO would be break-even flows in Q4. I guess you're now suggesting it could be positive net flows for Q4. And the second question, just a quick one. On the expense ratio, P&C expense ratio, you talk about special effects and business mix changes, and obviously the commission ratio is edged up slightly. What is the Q3 expense ratio, is that the ongoing level? Or will the commission ratio continue to rise a bit? I'm not sure what the noise factors are to think about on the trajectory there. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you, Andrew. Well, I don't want to guide to a final number for the inflows at PIMCO for the quarter. I have absolutely just reported about the October number. And when we analyze the development in Q3, we can actually say that we have seen already with the customers in Asia, with the customers in Europe and Middle East and Latin America, each positive net inflows for the quarter. So the U.S. is actually from a region, the area where we still have seen the outflows in Q3. So that is then the area to turn around. In particular, the income funds you mentioned are really doing well. For the first 10 months, we had close to $12 billion of inflows in this fund only. So, and our global wealth management had a very good month in October. So I think that are the main areas and the general information I would give to you without now really going into the full autonomy of the October numbers. Your other question was on the expense ratio. I would say there was some special effect in Q3 on the admin expense ratio, which will normalize in Q4. The acquisition expense ratio, that development is probably not reversing, as our fastest growing areas are the areas with higher commission rates.
So net, it should stay around this level then?
Well, in admin, maybe 20, 30 base points down.
Okay, and but I guess the commission ratio could still edge up a bit further. Sounds like.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay, we have time for one last question, if there's any.
As a reminder, to ask a question, please press star one. We will now take our final question from Michael Huttner from J.P. Morgan. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Fantastic. There was a few hours ago, there was a big mine flood disaster thing in Brazil. So is there any exposure to that? And allied to that, can you say a little bit more about the trend in large losses? It's just that one of your competitors clearly has issues with that, and just a bit of reassurance would be lovely. Thank you.
Michael, I was the whole day in communication, so therefore I don't know what happened in Brazil and in the mining industry there. So therefore I can for sure not comment on this. I believe I mentioned that our accident year loss ratio has 50 base points increase in Q3 from large losses. And that is well distributed across many. So it is I would still consider it as a small uptick, nothing really special.
Okay, so no special actions and no
cleaning up of portfolios.
No, lovely. Okay, great. That's all. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Then I thank you all for dialing into the call and participating so actively with your questions. And I hope I see all of you at our Capital Markets Day, which is, Oliver, on
November 24th. Yeah, goodbye from my side as well, and we wish you all a very relaxed weekend. Thank you.
That will conclude today's conference call. Thank you for your participation, ladies and gentlemen. You may now disconnect.